is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The South Caucasus, in much in turmoil these last years since the end of the Soviet Union, because of two claims, one by Azerbaijan, the Republic of Azerbaijan, and one by Armenia, about a property called Nagorno-Karabakh, an agrarian-based mountainous region between Azerbaijan and Armenia. The war was fought. It was not resolved in any fashion, but Armenia took possession until 2020, during the pandemic. Azerbaijan and Armenia again combat, and the result so far is a unfinished business, but momentarily no shooting. I welcome Ekaterina Zolotova of Geopolitical Futures writing about this conflict zone, but looking at it from the much larger perspective, not from the point of view of Baku, not from the point of view of Yerevan, the capital of Armenia, but from the point of view of Moscow. Because once upon a time, this was the Soviet Union's empire, the Soviet republics, Armenia and Azerbaijan. Once upon a time, all this was resolved, which you'd have to say is brute force, made it sure that the area was not fought over. However, with the exit of the Soviets, the conflict zone has lasted until now, and the Russians are back. But they're back as peacekeepers. I understand it can be very confusing, but of course the geography makes it even more so. Ekaterina, a very good day to you. You write about an area of the world I have some familiarity with because I've often traveled to Baku and been to the front line that is said to be from here on is a conflict zone, Nagorno-Karabakh. In 2020, when I was there, the resolution of the conflict, Russian peacekeepers had entered the story, and there were said to be talks between Yerevan, Azerbaijan, and Moscow. As of now, those talks have not concluded happily. Where are the Russian peacekeepers in this geography? Where do the Russians plant their soldiers in order to maintain peace between the two warring sides? Good evening to you.
Good evening, and it's great to be here. Yes, and now we're going to talk about the very difficult part of post-Soviet world. This is Nagorno-Karabakh, and this is the land that is situated in the Caucasus, in the South Caucasus, and both countries, Armenia and Azerbaijan, have big disputes about this land. So at the end of the Second Karabakh War, the one that you've mentioned that happened in 2020, the Russian peacekeepers and Russia could mediate between these two countries. They could come to the first kind of peace agreement, and Russian peacekeepers were placed in the Lechen Corridor. Lechen Corridor is the part of the land that connects Nagorno-Karabakh, where there is still a lot of Armenian ethnicities living. And it connects this part of Nagorno-Karabakh with Armenia itself. And it is surrounded by the lands of Azerbaijan. So Russian peacekeepers are staying exactly in this Nagorno-Karabakh, and they try to make sure that there is no shooting, that this road is open, and all humanitarian goods, medicaments, and other stuff can pass freely through this Lechen Corridor from Armenia to Nagorno-Karabakh.
Yes, what we have here is a simple version, Armenia to its settlers in Nagorno-Karabakh, the Lachin Corridor. There are other pieces of geography that can complicate this. Importantly, I'll mention Iran is to the south, the Islamic Republic of Iran, at odds with Azerbaijan. Turkey is to the west of Armenia and of an exclave called Nakhchivan, which is Azerbaijan. Turkey is allied with Azerbaijan, or was in the conflict. Armenia also houses two Russian military bases. One is an air base. So now that we've seen the big picture, we've got troubled lands in all directions. I look at this from Moscow's point of view, and Katerina's essay helps me. This is Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site. I highly recommend it. Moscow, what is in this for Moscow to wade into a conflict that has lasted, well, it's decades now, and it might even be, it's probably much older than that. This is the South Caucasus, and the conflicts date back well before the Soviet Union into the 19th, 18th, 17th century. But Moscow right now is involved in an unusual fashion. Why? Why does Moscow contribute its soldiers, and why does Moscow take the risk of both sides being unhappy?
This place, the South Caucasus, is very important for Russia geopolitically. It has a strategical meaning since many years ago. Before, when Russia and Turkey, better to say Russian Empire and Turkey, had the confrontation, this was the barrier between Russia and Turkey. Then, when the Soviet Union appeared and then Russia appeared after the collapse of the Soviet Union, this barrier became very important for Russian borders, since it was separating Russian territory, which is, was not very protected in the very beginning of its own history, from Iran and from Turkey as well. And this is not only the protection, it's also the one of the major transportation hub, because this area connects the routes from south to north, and or better to say from north to south. This is exactly one of the projects that, right now Russia wants to realize together with Azerbaijan, Iran, and it goes to Pakistan and so on. And of course, it connects the other two parts of the world. It's the east and the west, or better to say the Central Asia, which has a lot of resources, with the European part, which now is very interested in new resources, in new energy resources, and has a lot of projects in mind about the Central Asia and so on. So keeping influence in this part, it's very strategically important for Russia, because if it will have its presence there, it could keep control over the markets, it could be present in the markets, and it could have some kind of control over the flows, I mean, trade flows there as well.
You also make the point that Russia's concern about its borders is a way of talking about the Ukraine conflict, and the South Caucasus are Russian borders, so it wants to keep a hand in. Now, Moscow is taking risks here. It can't please both sides. Its soldiers are not there to fight, nor are they there to pick sides. There's been a roadblock at the Lachin Corridor for some time by, we're told, the Azerbaijan side. The Armenian side has protested. At the same time, the Azerbaijan side has protested that the Armenians not only are not demining, they're mining parts of this corridor, parts of the region. So we have conflicting claims by both sides. And now the twist. Armenia, which is allied to from the outside with Russia, is suddenly romancing Turkey or making gestures towards Turkey. Why Turkey? Turkey is a Azerbaijan supporter. How does this help Armenia?
Yes, it is an Azerbaijan supporter for sure. But Armenia is trying to have better relations not only with Turkey, it's also the European Union, the United States, and so on. I think about 2 years ago, Geopolitical Futures was writing an article about the relations between Armenia and Turkey. And in fact, despite the long conflict between these two countries, there is some potential of trade as well. And in fact, it was some trade. Plus, we also identified several important sectors like textile, for example, that was still dependent on Turkish materials. So there is an economic aspect as well. Right now, it is there is an interest for Armenia to have better relations with Turkey and the countries around, simply because Russia is quite busy with many other projects and other problems, and doesn't have enough money for investments, financing economies, and so on. Armenia is trying to balance. The basic idea of Armenia is to balance between different sides, Russia, the European Union, the United States, Turkey, or whatever, to attract the investments, to keep the pace of its economy, and so on. So trying to have better relations. And for example, right now, Armenia made a great step. I think a couple of days ago, the Minister of Foreign Affairs arrived to Ankara, where he had discussion with the foreign minister of Turkey. Plus, Armenia also sent some help because of the earthquakes in Turkey. So all of these are really good gestures for Armenia and Turkey to return their relations to the diplomatic level. So Armenia, the Armenia's basic idea is to keep the neutrality and try to balance, not to be so much influenced by Russia as it was during the Soviet Union.
Before the Ukraine conflict, I learned from Ekaterina's reporting, trade between Russia and Armenia was significant, $2.6 billion, 34% of Armenia's imports. Since the conflict, now the question is, Armenia a workaround? Are there a number of Russian tech workers in Yerevan? You report that there's been an increase in Russian companies in the country from February to August of 22. Is that the flight of the tech workers from Russia to Armenia that we've been hearing about?
Yes, mostly this is tech workers. So let me explain how the trade was doing during all of this period. Armenia became one of the points where Russia could provide its parallel import. So a lot of goods, when the sanctions were posed into Russian economy, Russia lost the access to several tools, to several kind of equipment or whatever, and it introduced the policy of parallel import. Armenia is the part of the Eurasian Economic Union, the pro-Russian organization. So during all of this period, Armenia started to provide its help as a transit area. A lot of goods came through Armenia to Russia. So during all of this year, 2022, we saw a great increase in the trade between Russia and Armenia. Plus, when the new wave of mobilization, well, the only wave of mobilization, was announced in Russia, a lot of people, especially those people who can work remotely, decided to leave Russia for some time because they were trying to escape mobilization or other reasons and so on. For example, I have my friends who also migrated to Armenia, but they mostly migrated there for weather reasons, to tell the truth. And a lot of IT people, simply because they could work remotely, decided to choose Armenia because of its visa policy and the conditions of staying. It's quite cheap for Russians. The staying is quite long. You don't need an additional visa. So everything is good. Plus, it's easy to get there. It's very close to get there from Moscow, for example. This is why right now there are so many Russian people. This is why there are so many IT Russian people who have enough money and who are started to increase the demand for Armenian goods, for restaurants, for many other sectors, and they increase the economy of Armenia as well. Plus, some of these people liked to stay in Armenia, and they decided even to open their own business there. So what my friends that are living right now in Armenia are saying is that it is very normal to hear Russian speech in the streets of Yerevan and other cities. And indeed, there are so many Russian people till now. And most of them, they will stay there until the end of the winter for sure.
Ekaterina Zolotova of Geopolitical Futures in Moscow reporting on the unintended consequences of the border fight in Ukraine and the Yerevan climate, along with the unintended consequences of the conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia. When we come back, what is to be done? And also, how is the winter in Moscow, given the mildness of the winter across Europe? I'm John Bash.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations. as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows, but the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. When you need me, I'll be by your side. We all make choices. When it comes to alcohol, kids make choices whether to drink or not.
Bye, Dad.
Bye-bye.
Remember, I'm going to Alex's party tonight and sleeping over.
Hey, Em, have a seat for a second. Remind me about that party again.
Alex is just...
And adults make choices whether to talk about it. That's true of parents and every other trusted adult in a kid's life. Kids want to know our expectations when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. They want guidance and honest answers to their questions. And it makes a difference when the message is consistent and part of everyday conversations. So talk with your kids and help lead them on a positive path. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.